Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We will begin. We are studying Chapter 4, Section 3, Reincarnation and Resurrection. Should I continue or wait? L'shem yichud kud shabarichu ishkin tape. Kilu urkimu utkilu utkilu urkimu.
Has joined.
L'shem yud hei bavav hei. V'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah. La'asok Torah mitzvah. V'yihino amadunai Elohinu aleinu ma'asei yadenu k'nenei aleinu ma'asei yadenu k'nenehu. As I said, this week we're discussing Chapter 4, Section 3, Reincarnation and Resurrection. However, there are two other aspects regarding this matter. And the first aspect concerns a person who only received a nefesh during his first lifetime, but didn't merit to completely rectify it, and then died. Since this first body did not complete the rectification of all aspects of the nefesh, then at the time of the resurrection of the dead, only those parts that were rectified in the lifetime of that body returned with it. Resurrection of the dead is a fundamental principle of Judaism. Since the body participated in the performance of mitzvot, it is only just that it should also share in the eternal reward for that performance. Therefore, that body to come back to life in the time of the resurrection of the dead, together with those parts of the soul that were rectified during its lifetime. When this particular reincarnation resurrects, it receives only those sparks that were rectified through it. The other parts of the nefesh return to the other bodies wherein they were rectified. Therefore, when this nefesh reincarnates into another body to complete its tikkun, it can achieve the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama. This is done by saying the prayer as described above and in the last class, which is I believe it's a verse from Isaiah, but I could be wrong. We discussed what the verse is in the nighttime Shema. We also discussed that most renditions of the nighttime Shema do not have this. Only with this is coming from the teaching of the Ari. And if there's any questions about it, we can go into detail again, because people need to really understand that. Chapter 4, Section 1, we've discussed the second possibility. When the nefesh is completed in the second Gilgul, it can become a vehicle for the unblemished ruach and neshama. In this respect, it is like a first-time Gilgul. However, what concerns us here is not the possibility that all three parts of the soul can be received in the second Gilgul, but what happens in the time of resurrection to the body of the first Gilgul that has rectified only a few parts of the nefesh. Then all of the parts of the nefesh that were rectified in the second body, together with the ruach and the neshama, belong to the second body at the time of the resurrection. It was in the second body that the remainder of the nefesh, the ruach and the neshama, were rectified. The first body has no portion in the ruach and the neshama, but it does have a share in part of the nefesh, the part that was rectified with it. The remainder of the aspects of the rectified soul belongs to the second body. The rule is that the body of each person will be resurrected with those parts of the soul that were rectified in its lifetime. If only a few parts of Nefesh were rectified by the person of the first Gilgul, then those few parts that amount to nothing more than a minimal Nefesh will be all that is available for the resurrection of the first body. The rabbi will now draw a comparison between this minimal Nefesh and the minimal Nefesh Apologize for the interruption. I'm beginning a paragraph again. However, what concerns us here is not the possibility that all three parts of the soul can be received in the second Gilgul. But what happens in the time of the resurrection to the body of the first Gilgul that has rectified only a few parts of the Nefesh? Then all the parts of the Nefesh that were rectified in the second body, together with the Ruach and the Neshama, belong to the second body at the time of the resurrection. It was in the second body that the remainder of the Nefesh, the Ruach, and the Neshama were rectified. The first body has no portion in the Ruach and the Neshama, but it does have a share in part of the Nefesh, the part that was rectified with it. The remainder of the aspects of the rectified soul belongs to the second body. The rule is that the body of each person will be resurrected with those parts of the soul that were rectified in its lifetime. If only a few parts rectified in its lifetime, then that reincarnated body, that resurrected body, will only have those few parts of the Nefesh. And that is called a minimal Nefesh. The rabbi is now going to draw a comparison between this minimal Nefesh and the minimal Nefesh that we learned about in the case of the Yibum. This is like what was explained in the Saba of Mishpatim regarding Yibum. The first body did not succeed at procreating. It only merits the individual spark of the Nefesh. This is the spark that was left inside the woman during the first intimacy. However, the rest of the Nefesh with the Ruach and the Neshama belong to the second body. We learned about Yibum in Chapter 3, Section 6, and Yibum occurs when a person dies without leaving progeny in this world, and it is considered a lack of success, to the extent that it is as if the first body never came into the world. The entire Nefesh that was in the first body reincarnates to the second body, and in the time of the resurrection, it will arise with the second body. Only a minimal spirit called the spirit that the husband left within his wife is available for the resurrection of the first body. The rabbi is comparing the minimal spirit that was left within the woman to what is discussed here, namely the few parts of the Nefesh that were rectified in the first Gilgul in both cases, in Yibum and in the case discussed here, the rest of the Nefesh and the Ruach and the Neshama belong to the second body that will arise at the time of the resurrection. There is an additional basis to the comparison between our case, when only a few parts of the Nefesh are rectified in the first Gilgul, and that of Yibum, when no progeny were left in the world. In our case, as well as Yibum, the nephesh is not bearing any fruit. In our case, this is because it has no part in any ruach or neshama. They belong to the body of another Gilgul. This is the secret of what is written in the Zohar. Those bodies that were not successful are as if they never existed. This is remarkable because it is known that there is no Jew who is not filled with mitzvot, like a pomegranate. Why should it, an unsuccessful body, be non-existent at the time of resurrection? The pomegranate is a fruit that is full of seeds. Indeed, some say that the original pomegranate had 613 seeds, corresponding to the number of positive and negative mitzvot in the Torah. The sages used it to symbolize the internal condition of the Jewish people. They declared, "Even the empty ones among you, among Israel, are filled with mitzvot like a pomegranate." When a Jew does a mitzvah, he connects to and participates in all the mitzvot that were ever done throughout history. Excuse me. Thus, even the most insignificant of them is filled with mitzvot like a pomegranate. How then can there be a body that has no part in mitzvot to justify its resurrection? However, this alludes to the idea that the main source of pleasure in the time that is coming is on the level of ruach and neshama. This first body does not even have a completed nefesh. All it has is the spark left in his wife by the initial intimacy. Thus it has no pleasure, and it doesn't exist.
I don't understand the question. Are you basically asking, what if there cannot, for some physical reason, if for no physical reason, there can be no progeny? You have to understand why that occurs. It occurs due to a sin in a previous life. Both. Yes. Yes. He only has that the resurrected body who has participated in certain mitzvot. One mitzvot that it participated in is being fruitful and multiplying. By being intimate one time with his wife, he deposits this spark into her womb that is there so that in case he does not have children, he can still be resurrected. Now that spark is the only spark that is coming into that resurrected body. No, he doesn't have just one spark. He may have other components as well, but in an absolutely, I don't want to say worst case, in an absolute lack of energy case, in an absolute lack of energy case, all it takes is that spark to motivate and activate and make the body alive. And so he will be resurrected with that one spark. But if we go on and we'll learn more about this, unless you want to continue. Say again. No,
No. This is the reason why prostitution is a problem. Because every deposit by a customer to a prostitute, that spark from all of those customers are residing in her womb. And those sparks will go into conflict with each other. And it creates chaos in her life. So you've been married four times. You are carrying four sparks. I do know that, but it's okay. I don't know. Maybe you weren't intimate with all of them. I can't answer that. I do not know that. It's not my business. So let me not say directed to you. A woman with multiple marriages who has been intimate with the multiple husbands, she is carrying a spark from each of them. No. Just the first time. Just the first time. But in the case of a prostitute, each customer is the first time. Hopefully for her economic health, she does. That it's an excellent question, and I'm not sure that the conference call is hearing all of these questions. So let me kind of clarify this last question, which I said is a good question, is what happens if there is a condom used or some other form of birth control? We are talking about a spiritual spark. The condom is a physical thing. The other forms of pregnancy issues are physical things. They do not impact the spiritual cause. The spark is still there from that first interaction, intimacy. Ready to go on? Are there any questions from the conference call? No.
I would hear
music if they had hung out.
No, I heard you, and it was understandable.
I'm glad. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay. The person's participation in some bit of the ecstasy of the world that is coming is proven by the statement of the Saba in Zohar Mishpatim, in the Sulam commentary on the Zohars in Mishpatim, paragraph number 112. My commentary. The section referred to above as Sulam 112 runs to 119. In it, it explains how the original man is resurrected from the reshima, the impression left in the womb of his wife during zivug. This allows him to return to the world in another body, which may finish the correction. Both bodies will resurrect, yet the first man will not have a complete nefesh. One of the tasks that will need to be completed during the period of the resurrection will be the unification of the nefesh from the two bodies. That is not discussed, yet it is hinted at since it belongs to the period after the Mashiach. Suffice it to say that there will be different energy levels in the various bodies of people after the resurrection, and it only takes one part of a nefesh to activate a body. This at least is my opinion, as I have not read this anywhere, yet I have seen hints in various sections of the Zohar. That's the completion of section 3 of chapter 4. Go ahead. I will answer yes from the following discussion. In the case of an adoption, the child that comes from the birth parent really has a tikkun with the parents that adopts the child. There's a reason that that woman brought that child. But there's a tikkun relationship primarily between the two women, but it's between the birth mother and the parents, both mother and father, that adopts the child. The same thing would apply in answer to your question, because it's a very similar situation. You appear puzzled. You need some clarification. So repeat your question. Which woman? The woman of that she's being birthed with? Yes, he's transferring it to her. Because again, we're talking the difference between physical and spiritual. The spiritual action of intimacy takes place, but as Rabbi Berg described it, the man ejaculates into a petri dish. And then as the petri dish is being walked down the hall to be shot into the womb, all of the consciousness of all of the people it passes are impacting on that sperm. So you can't be sure what harm or good is being done by the consciousness of the people that are impacting the sperm. Because the birth of a child is controlled by the consciousness of the two partners, how unified they are. In many marriages, I'll just use an example. In many marriages, some marriages, there can be an argument followed by makeup sex. Sometimes that makeup sex is out of anger. And that is what is involved. So the consciousness determines the child that you draw. We see that in the scientific records of the videos that have been made of what happens in the womb, and you see the sperm surrounding the cell. And the first one that penetrates the wall, all the others support the action of that sperm getting into the cell. So you see the whole process is very much controlled by consciousness. The consciousness, the comparative level between the two parents, are they in love? Are they unified? Are they angry with each other? All of that impacts what type of child gets drawn.
We don't know.
You
you don't know, because you don't know the consciousness of the two parents anyway, even if they're being physically intimate. You know, my sister, in her intimate wisdom, once said to me that it's an absolute sin for her to be thinking of another man when she's being intimate with us, a man. When I heard this from her, I didn't accept it. It was only after I studied Kabbalah and understood what is the cause that I understood. And it was, to me, it was just reinforcing what I had learned in Kabbalah about how the woman is on a higher level than the male.
That would be synonymous with prostitution. It's while you're being with your husband and you're thinking of somebody else.
Again, someone who's you don't know the consciousness of someone that's with a prostitute. So we don't know the consciousness and the unification, but we do see the results. When you have a child that is...
That's her. It doesn't connect to the cell with the ovary.
But that's in control of Hashem. But you also need to understand, which we haven't discussed yet, the child that is drawn initially receives the consciousness of the mother more than the father. But as it's growing, that transitions so that the consciousness of the father has more impact on that, the consciousness of the child, than the mother's consciousness. I've not heard that, read it, or seen that, and my initial reaction is no. They serve two different purposes. The mitzvah of nurturing a child for 9 to 12 months, every day of that is a mitzvah. Every hour of that is a mitzvah. Every minute of that is a mitzvah. So the number of mitzvot that a man does versus the number of mitzvot a woman does, you look at it on what we understand the three basic mitzvot is the responsibility of the woman. But that's not the way Shemayim looks at things.
But 9 or 12 months, he could have performed more than 630 mitzvot.
In our generation, where women are studying the mitzvot, and they cannot produce those mitzvot, but by the study, they are given credit for it, because that's the process of the growth of the female to the level of the male, and then together they will grow 7 times, as the prophet said. Have I clarified for you, Joe, or not? Never dies into a second body. Every person who's ever lived, as long as they have done at least one mitzvah, they will be resurrected. So, and don't worry about how much food is going to be available.
Okay.
No. Adam was, according to the Midrash, Adam was and Eve were 20. The there are others who say he was 26. Others who say 23. So. Not that you have to, but that you have the opportunity to. There are more souls than bodies? Who says? Remember, we're talking sparks. We're not talking parts of a soul. There are 613 parts of your body. There are 613 parts of your soul. Then each of those has five levels. So the nefesh has five levels of the 613. The ruach has five levels of its 613. And the neshama has five levels of its 613. And in earlier generations, where there were the very high-level souls that would have a chaya, the fourth level, they would have five levels to the chaya to be corrected. Remember, we talked about saying a verse at night that would allow you to not have to die and still come back with a different component of the nefesh or the ruach or the neshama, and then having gone through enough of those changes, enough of those components being exchanged, because once a component has reached its tikkun, it stays in heaven, and the other, a new part of that, a new soul for that body part comes down. And when enough body components have been changed, the person has a desire to change its name, because that name is no longer reflecting the tikkun of that body anymore. Or that really the tikkun of that soul anymore. Remember, put it in the perspective of the Adam. Eve was pushed into the tree according to the Midrash. She was pushed into the tree of knowledge, good and evil. And she perceived through touch there was no harm to that. Now, the Satan pushed her. Okay? Well, how far did he push her? Did she stumble where she took a step? Then her foot and her leg are involved in the tikkun because they participated. Obviously, the mouth is because she ate, metaphorically. Obviously, the digestive system is. Again, it's metaphorically, and I don't mean to make something confusing. But each of us, if we do a sin, or we do a mitzvah, all parts of our body are not necessarily included in that action, but many of the parts are. If I see a beautiful woman and I turn away, so I don't allow the thought of lust to come into my consciousness, where's the mitzvah? Is it my eyes? Is it my thoughts, my brain and my eyes? Is it my ears because I heard her voice? Is it the evaluation that the dress she's wearing is what attracts me? All of these things change how my body parts are interacting in the mitzvah or the sin. Give you an example. I could do it with two different body parts. I could do it with the thumb or with the male organ. Which would you prefer me to explain with? There are thumbs that are longer than the other thumbs. There are thumbs that are longer relative to the other fingers. Why does that happen? It happens because of the mistakes that were done by the thumb in the previous lifetime. That thumb becomes shorter relative to the other fingers. The other fingers didn't participate. I pointed with my thumb or I pointed with my index finger. It changes the relative relationships of the sephirot that they represent, but it also changes the relative physical effect in their next body. Yes, that is controlled by the DNA. But that controlling by the DNA is coming from the spiritual judgment that comes out of that Bet Din from their previous lifetime. When Toby constantly reminds us, everything is in the hands of Hashem, except the fear of Hashem. Everything else comes from that. Someone is short, someone is tall. Why? Oh, it's the DNA, it's the luck of the genetic wheel. No, it's not. It's coming from the spiritual effect of that previous lifetime. But we have been inculcated in the Western world. We don't think in terms of the cause being spiritual. We follow science. Science, but what is science? What are the hypotheses of science recommending and changing and suggesting? The hypothesis, it comes from a thought in a scientific mind. And then he designs an experiment to prove or disprove the hypothesis or the theory, the thesis, whichever word you want to use. Where did the thought come from? The thought does not emerge from the body. The thought comes from outside of the body. How do we know that? Why do you think of a particular thought at a particular moment in time? Why didn't you think about it 2 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later? It's coming from outside. Your antenna, the brain, is the antenna for these thoughts. Cause and effect. Cause is always spiritual. What's the proof of that? Throw a baseball through a glass, through a window. Videotape the flight of the baseball. Before the ball reaches the glass, the glass starts to break. The cause is always spiritual. The reason the glass breaks is because I thought it's going to break. I didn't think it was going to break, it would just bounce off.
But why? How can I stop thinking, oh, it's going to break? Because a million times I threw the ball against the wall, it looked like it was breaking. I throw a rubber ball against the window, I don't think it breaks. But it's the same amount of speed, it's the same mass. But it doesn't break the window. My consciousness. How do you cross the street? Baruch Hashem. In order to cross the street, you have to go halfway across, correct? You must cross the street the first half in order to get to the final half, correct? In order to get to the first half, you have to go to the first quarter, correct? In order to get to the first quarter, you have to go to the first eighth, correct? In order to get to the first eighth, I have to go through the first 16th. To the first 32nd, to the first 64th, to the first atom, when we take it all the way out to its extreme. Kabbalah says, very simply, you want to cross the street, you think you're there. And now the physical body catches up to the thought. It speaks in terms of, when you're walking on the beach and you're making footprints in the sand, you're not making the footprints. Those were the footprints that you thought about yesterday when you thought about walking on the beach. You created those footprints. So when you go walking on the beach, you're just stepping into the footprints you made yesterday. Because consciousness controls. Spiritual is the cause. Consciousness is spiritual. And that's why we call it Cuckoo Kabbalah. But I joke with that because I know how serious it is. I heard this same stuff from my teachers. And I said, okay, where's the cuckoo, right? I know, that's where we go through. It can't be this way. The Western world doesn't see it this way. They can't be that wrong. What's the conflict between Judaism and Greek philosophy? The real illness is somebody says it's Judaism is Jewish philosophy. But forget that. You have Judaism and you have what we call Greek philosophy. What is Greek philosophy? It's all body, all physical. That's the conflict. That conflict has been going on for 4,000 years. What was wrong with the generation of the flood? This week is Noah. We're studying the generation of the flood. The Torah says they robbed. There was too much robbery. And the earth became corrupt. Why did the earth become corrupt? Because people's consciousness was corrupt. Each people harmed other people. They didn't want to share. Why would they steal? Why would the animals try to have zavug with the wrong species? Constantly in Genesis and in Noah, it's talking in terms of the fruit after its kind, the insect after its kind, the animal after its kind. Stay within your species. But what was happening? People were doing actions that caused the animals, the plants, the insects, all to be doing wrong actions, going away from their instincts. because the human being's consciousness controls the animal's consciousness. When I was 8 years old, dog barked, and I ran away, and he ran after me and bit my leg. But then I learned the next time the dog barked, I just walked in the calmly away. What was the difference? I was afraid the first time. Where did that fear come from? Came from last lifetime. When the Germans had the dogs, and I was involved with that. I wasn't in a camp. I was in a partisan group. But the Germans would hunt in those forests with dogs. But then I learned, I don't have to be afraid. I control the animal. The lion, are you gonna be worried about the lion attacking you? You're in control. But where's your certainty? When that lion roars, people get afraid because they don't understand consciousness. They don't understand spiritual is the cause. We have 10 minutes left, so are there any questions? Want me to go on? Did I upset enough of you today? Do I need to work harder next week? Good. Baruch Hashem. Yes. Yes. By Baja, good deal.
Yeah.
Correct. According to the Midrash, that is correct. And the rabbis explain that is that Moshe would have been corrupted by milk from a non-Jew. Did that milk have the spark of what? He gave birth to him. Of course it had the spark of the father. The consciousness of Yocheved and Amram. They gave birth to him. But then he's going to be killed in order to save his life. She puts him in the basket or the ark, puts him on the water, and Batya takes him in, and so she's adopting him. But he always knew that who his mother was because he was drinking her milk. Absolutely. Back to consciousness. There's no hectares on a mother's milk. But there is a difference between the milk from a child of Israel's woman and the milk from a child of another nation's woman. There's a difference. Because I understand the difference between the other nations and the children of Israel. You know, when I do the Mishnah Berurah with Toby, I start with the children of Israel or the Jewish people. Sometimes I say Jew, sometimes child of Israel. But I say, well, you can hear me. You know the words. You just never asked a question. But what I say is that child of Israel. May all of the children of Israel who are ill be healed. That's what I say to Tobit. And he says that, repeating it, basically bringing it into his consciousness. And then I continue. May all the children of the other nations who are ill be healed. And he repeats that, bringing it into his consciousness. That's the process of the Mishabera. Why do I do it step by step this way? Because there's a difference between the children of Israel and the other nations. That difference is the desire to receive. The desire of the children of Israel is to be closer to Hashem. The desire of the other nations is a different desire because they have a different purpose. They were created for a different purpose. And this gets into the concept of converts. What happens when a child of the other nations decides to be Jewish and goes through the mikveh? What do they do? What happens? Their soul gets, they get an extra soul is the terminology. But it's really, they're getting a greater desire to receive. A greater desire to receive being closer to Hashem. And there's a difference. But it doesn't mean that they're better. It means that they have a greater desire to receive, either for good or for bad. We have some wonderful criminals. Who was the guy who did the Ponzi scheme of 10, 15 years ago? Bernie something or other. Madoff. Who built Las Vegas? Bugsy Siegel, but also the guy who lived in Florida. What's his, the smart one who didn't have to do anything except talk the others into doing it. Bugsy Siegel and we have tremendous criminals. The biggest criminals of the world are Jews. The biggest righteous people in the world are Jews. Correct. But everything is a function of consciousness. Everything is a function of consciousness. And consciousness is spirituality. Is consciousness thought? It's a whole discussion. Rabbi Bar Sadak, who's one of my teachers, he quotes, I think, therefore I am. I always forget the name of the philosopher who made this statement. And then he says, no. Before I think, I'm already aware. If I'm aware, I don't have to be thinking. I just am. Mm-hmm. That's the question, isn't it? What Toby said is you I am out of rote. You can't be rote. Correct. Correctness. Every human being stops thinking. They run a robotic process. The sentence is, hello, how are you? We say it 100 times a day to different people. The only sound that is your consciousness is the hey, for hello. Once you've made that sound, the rest of the sentence flows. That little breath, there is no consciousness in that, the rest of the sentence. And so when you say something like, I'm rolling along, they stop. Because they didn't get the robotic consciousness. Because they didn't understand, it wasn't their menu, the consciousness. They weren't asking, how are you? They were saying, here, words just to say words. They weren't conscious of the words they were saying. Kabbalah is trying to instill the change of thinking from the rote mentality to a conscious moment-by-moment decision process. That's what we are trying to do. That's what the other 90% of our brains are. According to science, we only use less than 10%. What are the 90% for? To be conscious of each moment. Because that's where the pleasure is. Hashem created us to receive pleasure. Created us to reveal his light, which is how we receive pleasure. The effect of revealing light is receiving pleasure. Fear and love. Fear and love. Or awe and love. Four levels. Love has two levels, and yirah has two levels. Whole long discussion. What Kabbalah describes it metaphorically as a multi-cinema. We know the multi-cinemas. You go to a movie theater now and there's 27 movies playing in there. But the difference is all 27 movies are playing your life. In one movie, you marry this woman. In one movie, you're homosexual. In this movie, you have 7 kids. In that movie, you have 3. In that movie, you have 25. That moment, you get married 4 times. In that movie, you get married once and live together for 70 years, but can't stand each other, all 70 of them. All of the movies are your life. Which movie are you going to choose? You do have a choice which movie, but once you enter the movie theater, it's just playing out the movie. You are no longer in control. You're watching your life. How do you choose a better movie, a one with less chaos? Called binding by striking. It's called stopping your reactions and thinking about what's best for the other people. And then doing an action that is manifesting what's better for them. If you're doing it because you're frightened, anything associated with your selfishness, you go to a lower movie, a movie with a greater chaos. This is the sequence. You have no free choice except to stop your emotional reactions. And with that, the class is over. Any other questions on the conference call?
No, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you. You be well.
Okay, you too, Hannah.